You want to save on the most popular PodNuts products? Go to our new page at podnuts.com/deals. And while you're there, get on the PodNuts hot list, where you're going to be sent exclusive weekly deals. You're going to get the latest PodNuts news, so you're in the loop. Welcome to PodNuts Daily, episode number 335, the show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. And this time, on this show, is a tech that you guys have been clamoring for.
They have, Steve D. I actually didn't.
Steve D is on the show, guys. He hasn't been on PodNuts Daily in a long time.
Yes.
Really happy to have him on the show tonight. It's going to be a fun one. Steve D, I'm serious. I should probably have forwarded you that. I've been getting emails through the months here saying, we want more Steve D. So I'm really happy that you came on, man, especially on the last minute. I appreciate it.
Sure.
So how you been?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Business is doing well. I've been busy. I always have something to do here at the shop. I mean, between eBay, which I've just started resurrecting, and then all the repairs that come in, I get crap in here that's unbelievable. Yeah, stuff all over the place. It's crazy. Customers tend to drop things off and not pick them up.
Yeah.
Despite how many times I call. I had one, actually like her. We ended up reconnecting, but this one lady drops off her laptop and she goes, yeah, this is really important to me, this laptop. And I was like, oh, okay. I'm like, I've heard this before, whatever. And she goes, no, I'm just kidding. I found it in the garbage.
Really? That's awesome.
I'm like, wow. And I open it up. It was a big Dell. And open it up as a laptop. And I mean, there was corrosion like from the water that was pouring out of this. I could tell somebody like put it under a gutter or something. It was crazy. I mean, there was literally like corrosion marks from water like coming out of the USB ports on the sides.
Really?
It was unbelievable. It was so filthy. And the screen had water damage, but like inside the LCD.
Yes.
Somehow.
Now I know how, because I pulled a 62-inch Mitsubishi DLP out of the trash, and that had water in between the screen. There must be, well, I mean, you've pulled apart a screen. There's like all the layers. So it got in between the layers. That's what happened with this thing. But it dried out.
Now, it cleared up. Yeah.
Yeah. Did it dry up on that thing? Well, I mean, I can't imagine that you got that thing working finally, did you?
Oh, yeah. But it was easy. I just hit the power button. It worked.
With all the corrosion and everything?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know why. It don't make any sense.
Wow. She got lucky on that. She pulled out of the trash and worked, but the screen. Well, why did she bring it to you?
The hard drive worked. The hard drive worked.
Oh.
Everything worked. I'm saying, even the hard drive, everything worked. She gave it to me. She found it in the trash. She was walking her dog or something down the road, you know, in her neighborhood, and just like leaned over an empty an open trash can and saw a laptop sitting at the top. And she was like, cool. So she just put it under her arm and kept walking. And then eventually she came to me.
But what does it need?
It needed a DC jack, and it needed a reinstall.
Wow. Now, let me ask you this. When you saw the corrosion like coming out of it and you saw that it was water damage, did you take it apart and clean it up, or just if it worked, it worked?
Well, I had to do the DC jack, so I cleaned it up a little bit.
Okay. How did the motherboard look?
I should have taken pictures. It was all right.
Okay.
It was actually way more corroded in some areas than others, but it wasn't like electronic corrosion. It was just like, it just looked like residue from whatever crap was like poured into that.
Right.
And it was like not clean water. Let's just say that much. I'm not sure what it was. It could have been poo for all I know. But dude. Actually, I don't care. You know, I'm just a maniac. I don't really care.
That's cool. Well, good. It looks like you got a Dell factory going on over there.
Oh, yeah.
Let me guess. Don't tell me models. The one behind you is a 9400 Dimension, and the one on the desk is a 6000 Inspiron.
This one is an E.
Okay, if it's an E, don't tell me. If it's a 1505.
1505, and this is an E510.
Damn. But if you look online, the E510 is exactly the same looking as 9400, isn't it?
100%. The case is identical. The only thing that's different is the label. I think even the hardware is the same.
All right. So it was a nice try. It was a nice try.
Yeah, it's probably the same motherboard for all we know.
No, actually it isn't, because I went through that and I bought one for it and it didn't fit.
And, oh.
Yeah, it's a pain in the butt.
I had one where I bought This was fantastic. It was like an older model, one of those older plastic crap ones, and somebody really wanted me to fix it. I couldn't believe it. So I ordered the I looked at the motherboard. I found a compatible part number online on eBay, and I bought it. And it was like $30. It was really cheap for the motherboard shipped. And then so I got it. It was it said it was compatible, but the interface for the front was on a ribbon cable, and it was completely missing on the motherboard.
Really?
I was just like, oh, you gotta be kidding me. So, I mean, you know, the parts dealer thought it was compatible on eBay, but it turned out not wasn't. So what I did was, I was like, oh, man, I can't believe this. I was all bummed out. I was really pissed off. So I reordered the right one and made sure the model was exact. And then the part number on the motherboard.
Yeah.
And so it came and it did the repair. And then I got this extra motherboard. I'm like, what am I going to do with this thing? So I looked it up, right? I was going to yell at the guy and tell him it wasn't compatible and get my money back and scream and yell and spend $6 to ship it back. But then I started doing research and I realized that there was no other model of this part, no Dell of this specific motherboard anywhere on eBay. I was like, I'm the only one? Actually, I think there might have been one other guy selling it for like $300. He was an idiot. So I took it and I sold it for $100. I made I made almost the same amount on the resale of the motherboard that I did on the repair for the laptop.
Bought the motherboard for $50?
It was a desktop. I bought it for $30. I sold it for $100.
You bought it for $30? Damn, yeah. Man, that's a good price.
Yeah, and that was my mistake. It's not too often you make a mistake and make $70 on a mistake, you know?
Yeah, that's hard.
That's called a fun mistake, you know?
Well, speaking of eBay, I've been eBay dormant kind of myself, but I've been starting to sell stuff lately. I sold like 4 things. I don't know, man. How is the eBay landscape these days? Why are you getting back into it? It's not totally botched. I mean, is it kind of the way it always was? How is it?
It's a little oversaturated. In most places, it's completely – most parts are oversaturated. So to sell parts individually is a little rough. You're not making a whole lot of money. That's what I'm seeing. There's a lot of people in it, and there's a lot of competition per part.
So why did you get back into it?
I got back into it because I'm doing things differently. Originally what I was to do is I used to buy bulk lots and parts, just like old random crap in a box. And I'd individually list them all. And I was making pretty good money. I was making like $15, $20, $10 per part. It was roughly about that. And I was the markup was unbelievable. It was to the point where I didn't even count it. I mean, I just bought it. I'd make my money back in the first few items I pull out of the box. And there was like hundreds in there. So, I mean, I was selling stuff like LCD cables, inverters for, you know, these are for things for laptops specifically.
Little things,
all sorts of tiny little laptop parts. And that was my deal. That was my thing. The problem was that all my inventory got old. And people, after a certain point, they just, you know, they'd rather not fix the computer. They'd rather just buy new, you know. So you know, how many times are you going to buy an inverter for like a old P4, you know?
Yeah.
He's just going to let it go eventually. So, and then not only that, but there was also a ton of new sellers selling a lot of the parts I had. So it was so much stiff competition. And eBay competition is dumb competition. It's not like your normal competition where they actually own a business. These guys, they'll sell cables for $3, even though every single person will have it up for $30. I mean, there's just idiots selling this stuff sometimes.
Right.
So the problem was this, there was an oversaturation. Most people compete only by price. This is eBay for you. And and people buy by price usually, you know?
Sure.
So I just got out of it because I wasn't making any money. I didn't replenish my stock. That was my problem. I didn't get new stuff in. I just kept the old crap laying around.
Well, did you liquidate your old stuff?
No. It's just been sitting in a basement. I'm doing that as we speak, pretty much. I'm having bulk lots going out right now.
Oh, that's what you're doing back in eBay, is bulk sell, you're getting rid of all your crap.
Yeah.
I got you.
But I'm going to be doing other things too. I'm going to be selling motherboards, full systems, parts of repair machines, things like that. I'm going to get into it, back into it for stuff, for things like that. I have a few other ideas. I'm not haven't completely ironed them out, so I can't say it publicly just yet exactly what my strategy is going to be, but it's going to be definitely different than per part, you know?
You're going to make SMD-branded computers with, like, a little sticker of your face on every one.
Nothing as interesting as that. Mainly, I'm thinking of, like, a reselling point-of-sale equipment, that kind of stuff. That's kind of the idea. It's basically buy-resell. That's all it is.
Yeah.
That's the big idea. That's about 80% of it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, good luck with it. I mean, when I started selling on eBay again, I had nothing was selling, and I'm like, the landscape has changed so much, and I'm totally out of the loop. Then my stuff started to sell. So I don't think it's – I mean, marketing's marketing. The rules of marketing have been around forever, and they don't change too much. They just need to – you need to adapt them to the new technology is all. So, you know,
sure.
Selling is selling. So I guess it's – hopefully it'll be around for a little while still, eBay.
Yeah, it's getting better. It's getting worse in some areas and getting better in others. It's they're always changing things on eBay, and it doesn't always make any sense whatsoever. And PayPal is getting worse and worse as time goes on. There's more and more like these like more like ridiculous rules and things, and they're very very skittish. If to start selling on eBay and to start a PayPal account, it takes a little while to ramp it up. Like there's a lot of little restrictions and things like they hold your money in like an escrow until the buyer gets it and leaves a positive feedback or it's 30 days or something, you know, there's like this little rules in the beginning. So it's
for new buyers.
Yeah.
New sellers. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's time consuming. That's what it really is. And you know what? We're so used to multitasking in this business to sit down and do one thing, write this listing for one item on eBay. Nobody wants to do that.
That's torture for me. I hate it. I hate listing things on eBay. But it happened to me one too many times, actually 20 too many times, where I'm doing a listing on eBay. I make this beautiful description, all the pictures and everything, and then you hit like the back button and it would all go away. Like, or you hit some button or your computer crashes and the listing's gone. Thank God when I did a listing this time, I hit the back button or something happened or I tried to load a picture and it brought up a pop-up window and I shut off the main window or something, but I went back and my listing was still there. I'm like, finally. So they at least improved that.
Yeah. And also the browsers have improved too as well. I think that has something to do with it.
Yeah, that probably was it. At least Weg Whitman's not around there. She's beaten up on the HP. So at least she's out of there.
Yeah. Well, it's still a mess. They're kind of slowly giving a little bit back to the sellers. But
did she not do good there? Or you don't know? I don't even know. I'm just bashing on her for no reason.
I don't think so, because I'll tell you, as an eBay seller, and I'm not the only one saying this. They're all pretty much saying this. eBay sucks, and they hate us as a seller, and it's really rough being an eBay seller.
Why would they hate you?
I don't know what it is. Well, I mean, you would get that feeling too if every single policy change, every single change is subtracting from the seller. They coddle the buyers because they've always had problems. They've been having problems for years. Buyers are fleeing eBay. You know, eBay's got whatever little problems. People don't want to, you know, auction, you know, for stuff a lot of times. And people have this perception that you can only buy used on eBay still, you know.
No, that still is around.
It is, yeah. You say, I bought this on eBay. They think you got, you know, like a secondhand lamp with that was probably sitting in a cat turd box at some
right,
you know, from a chain smoker, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And people will still be like, how do I know I could trust when I buy stuff on eBay? That's my biggest. When I say I bought stuff on eBay, they're like, how do you know you could trust those people? And I'm like, there's a feedback rating. So, like, that's still out there, too.
I mean, the way I look at it, I mean, you're buying, you know, a piece of crap for a few bucks. I mean, you're not sleeping with these people. You're just buying stuff from them. That's how I get annoyed with my clients. And they're like, oh, I don't use my credit card on the internet. I'm like, oh, congratulations.
I know. I know. I'm like, I'm the same way. I'm like, really? Well, it's like when I was at Walmart and the person in front of me wrote a check out the other day. And I'm like, why? Just why? I don't even use cash anymore. It's like it goes checks and then people use cash and then they use credit cards. Like, I don't even use cash anymore. So a check to me is just totally prehistoric. Don't use checks, anyone.
A pen to piece of paper is like, what?
I know. Seriously.
Really? Do that?
That's awesome.
Yeah, I can give everybody out there one little quick tip about eBay. Actually, it's a big tip for anybody. I mean, it's all these buyers, because not everybody wants to be a seller, and it makes sense to me. But a lot of people are buying on eBay, especially in this business. And one thing that's there's still a misconception out there, and it's a big misconception, and there's a lie amongst a lot of sellers, and that is that there is such thing as an as-is auction. There isn't. I'm here to tell you. There's no such thing as as-is on eBay, okay? So everybody can just, when they see that, just chuckle to yourself. Because if you find a legitimate problem with something that you bought, and it's a legitimate problem, like you got the wrong thing, you know? Or it's broken and says it was fixed, or that it works, you know, anything like that, you can have it replaced. You can have your refund at least, mail it back and get your money back. It doesn't matter what the seller thinks or does or says. You can force the returns with PayPal. And I think they're doing it with eBay now. They're handling disputes and stuff like that. But if you open a dispute, you will always win if it's like, say, a part that, you know, if there's an obvious big problem with it. So that's a big misconception. You see all these things of as-is auctions, as-is, no returns. Not true.
Really? So yeah. Okay. So they say no returns. I mean, it's whatever. It's however they describe it in the description. It has to fit that, right? No matter if they say as is or not.
Oh, absolutely. Right. Yeah, you can't just say I don't want this anymore. I mean, you have to have actual reason. Like if they sent you, if they said, when you send me an HP computer and it turns out to be a Dell or something, you know, or it works and it comes and doesn't, or if it's misdescribed or it's not the right item, you can have a return. But if it's because you don't want to return it because it took 7 days longer than you anticipated, no. You're not getting your money back. You're just keeping it. You know, it has to be a legitimate reason. But if it is, then, and you're fair about it, then you can get your money back through the PayPal process. It's a whole return thing. A PayPal dispute.
Right. I've done them.
Oh, yeah. So have I. I've been on both sides.
Yeah. Same.
But as a seller, I used to hit the refund button a lot more often than I know of a lot of other sellers. I can tell you that much.
You mean giving their money back?
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to mess around with people. Just, you're not happy? Okay, keep it, and here's your refund, all money. Right. Yeah, just go away.
It's just more, I know, it's easier to do that, and it's more productive to do that and go on to the next thing than just dwell on that stupid thing.
Oh, yeah. I had a long back and forth with a guy over a $5 part, and I was just like, how much do you make a living? How much do you make? You know, how many, what do you do? What do you do for a living where you can actually worry about, a $5 auction.
I know. Seriously. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Oh, man. What else you got going on at the shop? What other tips can you give us?
Oh, well, I can talk about a job I did. It was kind of fun.
Sure.
This is pretty fantastic. Okay. I'll definitely go to some tips and some things I'm seeing in the shop. I had a great job. But what I did was I did an on-site. I had an on-site call. Actually, before it was an on-site call, it was an in-shop job. The guy calls me up. He says he wants DOS 6.22 installed on a hard drive.
Wow.
Yeah. I was like, well, I the guy called, and I was like, well, I'm assuming you want it on an IDE hard drive.
Not that he knew what that meant.
Oh, no, he actually did. In fact, he knew how to use DOS a little bit, but he didn't know enough to have – he didn't have, installation media for DOS. But he specifically said, I want 6.22 installed.
You're lucky it was an IDE. But I had a computer come in that was before IDE. It sucked. But go ahead.
I wouldn't touch that.
Yeah,
I'd be like, take that to the dump, sir.
I agree.
And take that back to hell from which it came.
I can't remember why I took the job, either as a challenge or the guy was really nice, or maybe I told him there was no guarantee. I don't remember. It was crazy. Never again.
Go yeah, I you must have really been bored that day,
yeah,
or something.
I think so.
Or you're like, oh, it's time for some pain and suffering. let's work on this. Let's almost kill myself during this job.
It took a lot of hours, but go ahead. I'm continuing your story.
No, it's okay. Yeah, so I get this guy who comes in, wants DOS 6.2, very specific about which one he wanted on a hard drive. And I was like, yeah, sure. If you bring in the hard drive, I'll install it for you. So he's like, well, what's the price? I'm like, I don't know, $35, because it was easy for me. Mm-hmm. Actually had it on I actually downloaded it from a torrent site, Pirate Bay, and I had it on a disk. That's all. Not, I guess it's not legal, but whatever. So I did it. It's come after me, Microsoft, for 6.22. So I took the. I had a bootable disc. Isn't that strange? And actually birthed it onto a DVD. DVDs weren't even alive.
DOS is like, what is this large optical disc I'm on?
And so I popped into an IDE system, another client's, and pulled their hard drive, of course, popped in this one, and I did the CD, and this booted from the CD, did the installation. It was a full DOS 6.2 right on this hard drive. It took me about 10, maybe 15 minutes tops.
Did you say you just used a client's machine for this?
I used a different client's machine, yeah. Well, I didn't have it. I can't get IDE. I don't know why. There's a bug on my bench system where I can't get IDE drives to work on it, and it hasn't been killing me that much.
I got you.
But I'll tell you this, though. I did replace the motherboard, and it still has this weird glitch where it boots up and shows what odd characters for IDE drives. All right. Now I'm on a tangent. All right. Back to the 6.22 computer.
Yes.
So I get this, you know, so I finish installing DOS in this hard drive, and the guy calls me up, and he's like, you done yet? I'm like, oh, yeah, sure, done. So he comes, picks it up, and he goes, that was quick. He's like, that was good. How? And I showed him boot. I showed him boot to, you know, this right to see. And I'm like, there you go. This is the prompt. And he goes, oh, my God. He's like, that's so great. And that was so fast. Here, threw another $20. I'm like, woohoo.
Nice.
So I mean, like $55. Takes the drive, runs off, and he goes, by the way, right before he runs off, he goes, before he had the door open, he was standing in the door for him. He's like, you have any quick tips for installing, for using DOS? And I was just like, no. Like, it's not easy to use. And I was like, get a time machine. That's what you need. Or a manual. So he's like, oh, all right, I think I'll figure it out. So he runs off. I'm like, oh, I'm going to get another call for sure.
Yeah.
So he calls naturally, of course. He screwed it up, of course. You know, so he calls me up. And now...
What, did
this
he type F-disk or something?
Who knows?
Okay.
I don't know what he did. I know what he did. He copied command com from another installation over, and it just screwed everything up. And was
beautiful.
So he calls me up, and he calls me up, and he goes, yeah, how would you feel about going on site? So he's like, what do you charge? I'm like, oh, about $90 an hour. So he's like, okay. I'll tell you what, I'll give you a little more if you come and get it done today. I'm like, yeah, now we're talking. So I'm like, what's going on? And he tells me what's going on. He's in a microchip factory. And I didn't know such place existed near me. And still in my office, everyone. Put that on mute.
Thanks.
So he calls me and he says, he's like, just come on site, and if you get it done today, I'll give you a bonus. I'm like, hell yeah! So I went out and I went right to the place and walk in. It's a chip manufacturer. The guy wanted me to put on an almost bunny suit. I looked like a doctor. I had I'm sorry about that. That's another forward. That's my phone forwarding. I had to put on like a big white. He had me put on this like hooded white like Ivex like. Jacket thing that went over my clothes. I was like, whoa. And then I looked down and he was wearing like little like hairnets on his feet, like little foot booties. And I looked at them and he went, nah, you don't have to wear them. I was like, oh, it's like, thanks. So I walk in. I'm like, oh, what am I getting myself into? I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to end up turning around and walking out of this place.
Right.
I'm thinking I'm not going to be able to handle this job because this looks like pretty scary. So I get in there and I walk over and he goes, this is where the computer's coming from. And I look over and there's this huge machine that looked like it was actually the size of a big car, like a big sedan, you know, or maybe that's whatever, big car,
yeah,
whatever.
That's
So I'm like, wow, oh my God, what the hell is that thing? He's like, oh, it's a vacuum weld, such and such thing, this and that. And I'm like, all right, I don't even know what you just said. I don't really care. Show me this computer.
And it runs on DOS.
Runs on DOS, yeah. Okay. So I'm like, so this thing doesn't work, huh? And he's like, he points out it was all operated from a computer. And it's a computer from like 1993, right? So I'm like, oh my God. So I get down on my hands and knees and I start looking at it. I'm like, what's going on? It's got a failed hard drive. So I'm like, okay. So he was able to get it to boot at least, because with the DOS, you know, a failed hard drive is not too bad. You know, it still can kind of get around even though the drive is dying.
Yeah.
I was lucky. I'm surprised he's lucky that it didn't seize and he'd lose everything.
Right.
So he did a backup of his own off this drive And then I just took his backup. I reinstalled DOS and on site with a USB floppy adapter, by the way. I made the disk for a Windows 7 laptop, and
nice.
and then ported them over to the DOS system, and I remember all my DOS commands from when I was a kid.
Nice.
So I copied everything over, and he copied everything onto little diskettes, and I popped them all in there, copied all the system over, just did it right this time without copying command com like he did, and he demoed the system, and he goes. He goes like this after the job's done. It was complete. It was booting. Everything was good. He goes, well, I didn't want to tell you this. He goes, until now. He goes, what you were working on was worth about $165,000.
That machine?
Yeah. And he goes, it would probably cost me about $5,000 to do what you just did somewhere else. But you already quoted your price, huh? So then I was like, I don't really care. I was like, so then I was like, well. And I said, well, since we're now confessing to each other, I might as well tell you that basically I did this professional job on knowledge that I learned at 16. And you go, and I used it professionally, and I haven't used it since.
You haven't used it since you were 16?
Yeah, pretty much. When have you used DOS, you know?
Oh, totally.
So
what did he think about that?
He just looked at me and he was just like, wow, you've got some memory. And I was just like, I guess. I mean, I don't know why I remember this crap. And but I'll tell you, it was also that was minorly awkward, but was definitely awkward when this grown man literally squeezed me after I had finished the job.
What?
He as soon as he saw that thing boot and the machine start to come alive, he just leapt across the room and squeezed me.
No. Lovingly?
Lovingly, yes. I wasn't too pleased.
I don't know, man. You get caught up in the moment. I guess you just had to let yourself go.
I was like, what? I was like, it was a foreign thing for me. You know, I'm not really, affection and computer repair just don't really go together.
No,
you know? So,
no.
Yeah, so I didn't know what to do.
Yeah, I would have been
I don't know if I should stab him or kiss him. I wasn't sure. I just froze, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a tough situation. Total stranger hugging just doesn't go together, really.
Yeah, no. No.
That's awesome, dude.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good story, man.
Yeah, and then at the end of the job, he rounded me off and gave me a $60 tip. Woohoo!
Wow. So how much did you make at that on-site job?
It was more to the story, of course. I mean, yeah. I cut out the boring parts. Like I had to drive back to the shop and pick up stuff I forgot, you know, because I thought he was more prepared than he will actually.
I got you.
And things like that. So in total, it was actually a long job. It was about a 4-hour job. So between that and the other job I did, I was over $500.
Sweet, man. Good job.
Yeah, it was good.
What kind of chips did he make?
I haven't the slightest clue.
Okay.
All I know is that they're specifically for a specific industry and a specific kind of product, and they're customized. And they used to come from some other company, but they went belly up because the executive stole the money or something. That's what I heard from him. Nice. And he was having an open house day from a massive, massive clients that buy a lot of stuff from him. And he was pretty much a startup. He had been in business for about 9 months. And this massive company that was going to buy a lot of stuff from him was a really big deal. They were coming in next day. So the fact that I got this up and running, it made him look so much more impressive and so much more together. With this thing lying in pieces, he looked kind of like a dope. But now he really looks good, you know?
Well, that's why he hugged you.
Oh, yeah, that's why at the end. And then at the end, he also told me this, which is kind of cool. It ties up to the eBay thing. He says, you guess where I bought that machine from? And he even demoed it for me, which I thought was kind of cool. It's like, I'm like, where? I'm like, well, you know. He goes, eBay.
Really?
Yeah, he bought it on eBay. He said, my old job, where I used to work as an employee, we used to buy these things for $165,000. He goes, I bought it for six.
$6,000?
Yeah.
Dude.
It's a nice discount, huh?
I know, man. And the same type of thing. When I was doing this recording class in Clearwater, and they have all this like, million-dollar equipment and stuff, And I'm like, where'd you get that? How much did that cost? Because I'm asking all these questions. Like, he's like, this is a Neve preamp from like 1970. And he's like, this is what like, you know, like Whitney Houston sings out of, and Michael Jackson used this mic. And I'm like, where'd you get all this stuff? eBay. Like, he did not everything, but there was a lot of stuff he got off eBay. And then even at the end of the course, eBay was included in a place to buy a lot of the stuff. It was,
wow.
Yeah. I guess so. eBay's still very strong.
Yeah, absolutely. You can save a lot of cash.
Yeah.
You know,
totally.
I come from a mentality. My mom, she buys everything new, and it drives me berserk. If I need a lawnmower, I'm buying it used. That's my brain. I don't think any other way, you know?
Yeah. Does your mom have a lot of money? Because then...
No. Because she spends it all on new stuff.
I have to say, there is something for new. There's something to be said for new. I like new. The more new I buy, the more I like it. But you're right, it's expensive. Run out of money.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to buy a couch used.
Right.
You know? I mean, I'm not a complete maniac.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm going to buy carpet for my floor, I'm going to buy new. But
right. Yeah, there's some things.
I think anything with fabric, I want to buy new, you know? You don't want bed bugs on a chair, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to lay on a couch and then, like, a centipede, like, crawls out, you know?
Dude!
Yeah, that's pretty awful, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm not even going to think about that.
He freaked out. I scared.
All right, what else you got?
So that was my fun on-site job. I had a pretty decent I had a pretty cool issue. Actually, I got lucky on it too because I knew right away what it was. I had a guy bring in a Fujitsu laptop. Tablet, just straight tablet. There was no base unit for this, even though there was one technically in the world. He didn't own one, and he's a salesman by trade and goes around with this little tablet and impresses all his clients. Came in for a reinstall. And I don't know if anybody's out there has done a reinstall of one of these things. Oh my God. I don't even want to think about it. So I did I think he bought it used. There you go.
Really?
But the install was a disaster. And it's good to ask clients, like, how long have you had this? Do you want data, you know, from it? Like, what's the story? And then they'll usually freely tell you stuff. And he gave me a very key piece of information. He said, I just bought it, and now I'm having all these problems.
Really?
So I was like, okay, so is there any data on this thing that you want? He's like, nothing. So I'm like, fantastic. So I actually did, and I never do this, a recovery install. I never do them. And I'm weird, I know, but I never do recovery installs.
Well, then why did you decide to do it now?
Because because I don't hate myself enough to do a fresh install with a blank Windows 7 disk on a Fujitsu tablet. They're a nightmare with drivers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. The drivers make me want to... Oh, I don't know. That would not be fun whatsoever. So I decided to do the recovery on that. And then I cleaned up a lot of the Fujitsu stuff. I asked him, I was like, you don't want all this Fujitsu crap that comes with it. He goes, if its functionality is next to nothing, then didn't get rid of it. I was like, okay. And I was like, I know the difference. And so I removed did a lot of uninstalls after the recovery. And I kind of feels dirty to me to do a recovery install. I know a lot of techs are out there like shaking their head, or they're probably pulling their hair hearing me say that. But I don't do recovery installs, even if the partition's active, ready to go.
Wait, how is that dirty?
Because to me, it's a dirty installation, personally. This is my opinion, and it's just an opinion. I believe that it's a much better outcome if you do a fresh install without a recovery install. A few reasons. Number one, all that OEM crap is not going to be on the system.
Okay, which you can uninstall.
You can uninstall, but then, you know, it's never really fully uninstalled. And a lot of times it breaks when you're doing the uninstall, or it's just, you know, you're sitting there for like 30 minutes just hitting the uninstall button, you know? So, I going to each one and just down, uninstall, screw that. I'd rather just load fresh.
It takes longer to install drivers, I think. So I like doing recovery installs because you're bringing it back to the condition in which somebody bought it. Like, that's how it came out of the store. That's how it came out of the box in that condition. So I never thought it was wrong. I mean, I get what you're saying. I see that viewpoint now, but I never had that viewpoint until you just brought it up.
Well, it is a little different. I mean, I have to admit, I don't know if I call it wrong. I can tell you where I feel validated was when Vista, after Vista came out, or at least after SP2 for Vista, because a lot of these, a lot of them are still Vista systems we're getting, and this is how I had a recovery install. I bought a laptop. Yay. Right. I bought a laptop a little while ago. I bought my own, I bought an X61 tablet, Lenovo awesomeness. Right. And, I bought that. And when it came, the guy just did a recovery install on it, you know, and it came with, he didn't do any Windows updates. He just did recovery wipe and done hand. And then, you know,
right.
Drivers worked good. And he just slammed it in a box and sent it to me. When I get it, it had no service packs, Vista, and it was filled with, you know, Lenovo crap.
Yeah, but dude, you wouldn't prefer to have it that way? That's how you would have bought it new. Then you could install updates. That's no huge deal, but at least you have all the Lenovo software. You don't have to go digging around for drivers or anything.
Well, here's where the actual issue came in. Well, no, I'll tell you why. Because you said you glossed over the update thing, but the problem with the update thing was that's the actual real issue. Now, if I knew the entire scenario, if I was, you know, beforehand, I would still do a fresh install, which is what I ended up doing to it. Well, actually, no.
Why
I didn't.
Is the update an issue? You just get the updates.
Because with both service packs and most of the updates I had to do for Vista, it took 3.5 hours to do the updates.
I got you. I still think, though, dude, I still think it's right. It's like he gave it to you in the condition that if you would have bought it new, that's what you would have gotten, and it would have had to do the updates anyway. 3 hours, I don't know. You really want some stranger to to customize it his way?
No. I know you're right on that. If it's eBay, if selling on eBay, right, you do the recovery install and call it a day. Don't do updates, whatever, you know.
Right.
It works. It works good enough. It works the way it's intended. Send it off. But for clients, I do strictly. I strictly take a blank Windows disk and load it in and take the long way around.
Why?
Because my disks have SP2 on them for Vista, so. My install is faster because if I had to do an SP1, if I had to do SP1 especially, then I'd do SP2 because you have to do one and then two, right? That shaves at least 1.5 hours off right then and there.
You know, I never used WSUS. Do you use WSUS?
Nah, there you go. Now there's probably people screaming. Yeah,
use it either, but I think it handles all that.
Yeah, it does. And then you got a patched system too. I just feel it's cleaner. You know,
I got you. It's interesting. It might take the same amount of time to do a recovery installation, remove all the crapware, as it would to install. I still think it would take longer to install Windows New and install the drivers.
Well, the driver thing isn't too much of an issue for me because what I did do is, so I'm not too bright not using WSUS. Everybody should be using that, but whatever. I just never actually explored that avenue, even though people screamed at me.
Wilbur says he uses it and loves it.
Yeah, I should. But for drivers, I actually made something works really great. A few people talked about it. It's I actually went to the. It's very easy, so I can explain it pretty easy. Go to the driver packs. I think it's driverpacks.net.
Mm-hmm.
Type driver packs into Google. You'll definitely find it. And what you do is you get all the Windows 7 and Vista drivers are the same. You download all the different. It's torrents, but legal good torrents. They're okay. You download all of them in torrents. It's like 10 of them. Download all of them, and then you. Highlight all the 7 zip files, right mouse click, and then add them all into the same directory.
Into what directory? You broke up.
I'm sorry. You extract them all into the same place, or the same directory.
Okay.
And then they all come together in one big, you know, glob.
Okay.
And then burn that to a disk. And then what you basically have is one disk that has every driver on it. And that's for 7 and Vista.
And that works? How long does it take for the computer to find all those drivers?
It does take a little while. I mean, it for each one, it's very quick because you don't have to sit there. I mean, it's quick in the not taking up your physical time, but it takes maybe a few minutes for each one.
Gotcha.
Sometimes it's like 10 minutes. It depends on the drive. Okay. But the XP is slower. I can tell you that. XP, you can do this with XP with the driver packs, and it works really nicely. But the thing with XP is that you have to actually specifically point it to the drive, and it has to be on a burnt disk. So, I mean, it has to be on a disk. It cannot be on like a USB external hard drive. You know, you can do that with Vistin 7, but the driver packs have to be on a physical disk. In my opinion, they should always be put on the disk. It's so much easier. That's my opinion, though. And then it works really nice. Now, but I have to say, before you do driver packs and all this stuff, just do Windows Update. Real easy.
Do that first.
Oh, yeah. Good Windows Update always figures out a whole bunch of them. Yeah, and they do it automatically. With 7, it happens automatically. I mean, literally, you show the internet, you show the computer the internet, and it already a fresh install of Windows 7, it recognizes the missing drivers, and it'll like in the background automatically install them, and they'll be ready to go.
Sweet.
Yeah, I mean, for a lot of them, some of them you have to go through Windows Update, and it'll eventually get to them. But once Windows Update is complete, that's when I start doing the drivers because whatever it didn't fix, which is faster than driver pack disks, I do that. And the driver pack disks find a lot of stuff like unknown hardware. You're like, what is that? I don't know. I don't care. Just going to put this disk in here. It'll stall.
Yeah, those were the days, man. Yeah. That's good that 7 is much better at it.
Oh, Windows 7 is much, much, much better. For a while, it was finding every driver because it was so new, you know?
Yeah.
Windows 7, you install Windows 7, all drivers done.
Right.
But with driver pack disks, the whole thing is still, it's all solved, a lot of the driver issues.
So driver pack still is up, around, and kicking, eh?
Yeah, and working pretty good. Okay. And they're still doing updates for them for a lot of the driver packs, so they're pretty fantastic.
Cool.
Yeah, I still love it.
Cool. Hey, man, I got a question for you.
Sure.
Tablets and phones, are you getting them in the shop? Like, is it time yet, or are they just rare right now?
I'm seeing them occasionally. I'm starting to do iPhone repair.
Okay.
It's a whole nother ball game. It's a whole nother world.
How different, so?
It's just the parts are unusual. You know, I never looked inside of a phone before. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
It's tough, but I'm just learning it now, so I don't really have much to report.
How about suppliers and stuff? I mean, do you make a profit on it?
There's profit to be made. It's not a huge profit because, it's still like the laptop world now, especially in the laptop world, it's getting worse and worse. Some laptops are being sold new for $400 and clients, they don't know what's inside these things. They don't care what's under the hood. They just, they see price tags, colors.
It's actually usually enough. What's under the hood is usually enough. So it's kind of bad for us.
Yeah, it is. Especially considering the fact that you want to pull like $200 out of a job or maybe $150, $120 out of a job. And the laptop is like already a year and a half old. And if it's a part involved, it's like a $200 job. And they're looking at you like you have three heads when you want them to spend $250 for a repair on a laptop.
Really? It used to be, even though laptops were, because they were coming down when I had my shop too, but there was people who would boggle me when I'd tell them like, I could fix this for this price, but I would be ready to say like, but you could buy a new one for blah, and they would want it fixed. I mean, the sentimental value of these things goes a long way, and it was always surprising to me how many things people wanted to get fixed, but you're finding now that people don't want to fix them?
It's getting hard. I'm getting a lot of that. It's a lot of questions of, is it worth it? Almost every client comes in and is it worth it to fix it? And I always get that question. And of course, if I'm asked directly if it's worth it, like, look, if a person wants to spend $250 to fix a laptop worth $120, it's their prerogative.
Yeah.
You know, it's their issue. I mean, I'm going to tell them the price, and they're a big boy, they're a big girl. They can make their own decisions.
Right.
I'm not going to sway them out of it. I'm certainly not going to talk them out of getting something repaired. But the issues are that hardware is getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. It's getting kind of crazy. I try to hold onto the data element. Like I try to say, but all of your data is on this computer, and what I can do is I can do other things. So if the computer becomes worthless, I say, well, I can turn your hard drive, your internal hard drive, into an external hard drive. You know, like I have enclosures for them, and things like that. So I have IDE enclosures which never move. They just sit there on my shelf and collect dust. Nobody wants them. Nobody can want them because they're old. But the SATA laptop enclosures, they go, you know, somewhat. And some people want at least the service of turning their, you know, internal laptop into an external hard drive.
I guess then there's a lot of other services that go along now with having a computer. I mean, backups. People want backups, right? Do they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Antivirus, that still has to sell, right?
Yes.
So, yeah, I guess as the price of hardware goes down, there's still other things you could sell.
The big thing right now I'm noticing is there's a couple of things. One thing is, isn't a great tip for anybody marketing or just talking or working their websites and stuff like that. If you don't lose clients' data, well, first off, I think you're a technician if you don't. If you're an idiot if you're losing clients' data, in my opinion. I cannot believe that there's people masquerading themselves as professionals and they're wiping clients' data, you know, pictures and documents, music, movies, all that stuff that's on their systems, and they're just, oh, you want your computer operating system reloaded? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll do that for you, and then just wipe.
Yep.
And then they're like, oh, or the, you know, they say back up my data, and some of the clients are coming in. I'm having a hard time believing it, but I've had a few of them say this, and that is that they say I brought my computer to this guy, and he wiped my data. I lost everything, and I'm just like, oh, and I'm hearing it over and over again, not just by like some random Norton guy, you know, some guy from, you know, they called. Yeah, you know, called some Indian through Norton, and you know, and had them do a recovery install and wipe their data. I'm talking like these are like technicians in my neighborhood and stuff, and probably teenagers on bicycles from Craigslist for all I know.
All right.
But I mean, I've heard people getting wiped from Staples and the Easy Techs and
Office Depot.
Oh no, that's Staples.
Office Depot does it. I was just in there today.
They do?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
But these are the kids on bikes. Those guys, Staples is kids on bikes and teenagers. Yeah,
they just put them in a suit and tie. You know, they hand them a screwdriver and say, go fix some computers.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, I can fix a computer. I play World of Warcraft all the time. They're the worst. I go in there and try to have a conversation with them, and they're just like, I'm like, have you really worked on computers before?
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. I know.
Yeah. And the Best Buy, I've heard of Best Buy wiping people's data too.
Oh, yeah.
And just like, just neighborhood guys, like guys that are like with shops, my direct competitors.
Yeah, that's a bit odd, but they must be hiring Craigslist people or something.
I don't know what the deal is, but I've heard a couple of times. I felt really bad for some of them. You know, some of them, they come in here and they're like, I have like communion pictures on my computer, and this freaking guy wiped my system. And I'm just like, how? Like, that's the most, like, basic. Like, brush your teeth, comb your hair, and don't lose people's data. You're tech.
Oh, man. So true.
Ay-yi-yi.
Yeah, let's go full circle here back to because I'm curious about the iPhones. What was my question? Oh, how long does it take to do a repair on them commonly?
It depends on how new you are at it. If it seems as though that if you're new at it, it's like it takes me forever because I'm just looking at the thing and I'm like, strange object. You know, I've never even used one, let alone fix one.
But you've done a couple now, right?
I've done a couple, yeah. And each time I do it, it takes about three times as much as it probably should. It took me about half an hour to do one of them today. I did a 3GS. It was my first time. Yeah, first time doing that.
Oh, I was just curious. Yeah. But you're not getting any Android stuff in, tablets or anything yet, right?
No, not at all. Okay. I haven't touched Android. Yeah.
Okay.
I've only done a few 3GS ones, and I did one iPod. I don't know what generation. It might have been third generation. And that was a nightmare because I screwed the LCD panel up on that thing.
Did you? Crap.
Yeah. I was like, But I mean, it cost time more than anything because I had to reopen the unit and also I had to order the part. And that came
a few
years later.
I remember my first couple laptop repairs. I was like putting screws to the wrong screws in the wrong hole and it would pop up through the keyboard. I did that to one person. I ripped off a key off a guy's keyboard by accident. I used to drill an alternative hole and to put power jacks in when I was doing power jack repairs. I messed some stuff up, but you got to do that to get through it.
I learned laptop repair from selling laptops on eBay. That's where I learned laptop repair.
Oh, that's good because you own them.
Yeah, I own them. And oh, my God. Oh, God. This is fun. Everybody's going to get a kick out of this. So here's my first time with a laptop, right? I mean, I've only used one for maybe like a year. You know, I've always used desktops. I mean, laptops were still kind of, you know, new in those days. Well, new-ish, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I new in the world of, yeah, we can have one. You're not a business professional to have one. So I get this laptop in, and I'm like, oh, all right, I got to change the screen on this. Okay, cool. No, screen. I want to change the keyboard. Now, I don't know. You know, I don't know anything. I never had a minute of training. I just look and, oh, that's a seam. Let's pry, you know? And, you know, enough prying and enough seams, you find the right one.
Right? Okay, I thought you were going to say enough prying and enough seams, you're going to break something. Because that was always my rule. I learned it the hard way.
Oh, I'm getting to that.
Okay.
So, of course, now it looks like I was been chewing this thing because I got, you know, pry marks everywhere. And then I finally get to the, you know, I get to the right, you know, the what do they call it? The hinge. They call it the hinge cover above the keyboard below the screen. Yeah. So I pry that off. Finally, I'm like, woohoo, that was the one that needed to come up. It was my first time doing laptop repair. So I see four screws holding the keyboard together. That's tabs right from the keyboard. I can understand that. So I take them out, and then I lift the keyboard out, and I see the ribbon cable attached to the motherboard. So I'm like, oh, well, that's probably like a snapped in. So I just take the keyboard and just pull.
You what? You pulled on it?
I pulled as hard as I can. I pulled that keyboard off that laptop like I was starting a lawnmower.
So you just destroyed the ribbon cable?
Oh, I just knocked the I broke the
that little brown piece that snaps it in.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Snapped that thing right off and went flying.
Yeah, dude. I have been there. I didn't do them like lawnmowers, but I broke things many ways just like that. Just like that. Gosh, yeah. I'm trying to think. Yeah. So it's fun. Good times.
Oh yeah. And I remember so many things I've just screwed up. I started using soldering irons because I didn't have a soldering station like I do now. You know, I use a soldering iron. It's a plug, and then it goes two wires from the wall and takes 110 and puts it right in the palm of your hand, and like it's just a simple iron that you hold in your hand.
Dude, that's
like
what I used. Yeah, I didn't have a station. I used a 15-watt Radio Shack soldering iron, plug right into the wall.
Oh, I hate that thing. I use that thing, and it was just because the metal on that thing it's corrodes and it catches everything.
Oh yeah, I replaced so many tips on that thing.
Oh, I needed to replace the tip on mine, and then I just got so mad because it was so messed up, and I constantly screwing the tip in the place, and I'm constantly messing with this thing. I was just like, it was like a $5 thing, and I'm like, and I'm starting to get professional at doing this work, you know. I was just like, what am I doing? I'm making money. I got so mad at it in the middle of a job. You ripped it out of the wall. I walked outside. I flipped open my front door and threw it into the snow because it was snowing at the time. And I was just like, never again. I'm never using that thing again. I set it aside and I ordered, and this is craziness. I ordered.
A what?
I forget the name of it. I've ordered a professional $200 soldering station.
That's good. Do you still have it?
Yeah, I forget the name of it.
Dude, don't move around so much. You're staticking up. That's all right.
Yeah, I can't look. I can't get it.
That's but okay. I'm totally gone. My video is all whacked out.
Look at that. It's pretty funny.
We're going to keep the camera mostly on you. Yeah, I still haven't graduated up to a soldering station. I still use a soldering iron.
Well, I do it professionally now. You know,
you're right.
You're done with that world.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, now, I mean, there's so many benefits that first off, I mean, I use this thing professionally, so I need something that's not going to make me want to throw myself out a window.
Right.
And especially during the middle of a job, I was just like, I got to this point where I'm just like, you know what? No matter what, if I'm in the middle of a job and I need something, it's going on the list, you know? And one of the things was like, I was looking at soldering stations. You could spend $50, you could spend $200. And I was just like, oh, I guess I'll buy the $200 one. You know, because I mean, I'm not usually that way, but I was like, I'm not messing around.
Yeah,
I
actually, in that case.
When I was a kid, I used to do soldering. I used to do what they call prototype wiring, where you build boards from scratch. And so I see scratch, but they were printed from a factory. But it was just, you know, jam components into boards and solder them up. And we used the same stations. And I remember how quality they were. And I knew the Mickey Mouse thing I was using. So I was just like, you know what, I'm just going to just do this right.
Good. At least you had a reference point.
Yeah, I mean, like the wire, get an idea, like the wire that you're holding, you know, with the soldering tip, first off, it doesn't corrode nearly as much, and it's got a sharp tip, and also, I never replace the tips, because I don't have to, and then also, the little, you know, little cord, if the soldering tip touches the rubber cord,
it doesn't
melt it at all. It's actually, yeah, it's some kind of like high heat rubber crazy stuff, you know? Like probably the NASA probably made it.
Interesting. I didn't even use flux when I was soldering. Did you use flux?
Yeah. So you have to use flux.
Yeah.
You did desolder. Maybe you didn't. You didn't really desolder jacks off the boards because
I use a desoldering iron.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. They used like the pump thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Little pump thing, little turkey baster thing.
Yes. Oh, I have one of those.
Yeah.
I used it once and I just like, what am I doing? So I was like, what else is out there in this world that I can use to make, you know? And I found solder wicks. It's like a braided wire.
I've used that. Yeah, I've used that. Yeah, they're pretty cool.
But, you know, everybody might have used them and might have thrown them, you know, back in the bin and said, right? I'm not going to use this anymore. There's a trick to it. There's actually a very simple trick, and it makes it 50 times better.
What?
Flux.
Right.
That's it. You take the tip of the solder wick, you stick it into flux, and then it becomes like slightly coated.
Yeah.
And then you use the tip onto the braid just like you would normally.
Yeah.
It makes it work 50 times better.
Oh, dude. You're making me want to fix laptops again.
Oh, it sucks it right up. It's amazing.
Wow.
I mean, it like right out of holes, it defies gravity right up into the solder wick.
Defies gravity.
It's fantastic.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Good.
Makes life a lot easier.
Yeah. Maybe if I do it again, that is what I will be using. let's do some emails. You want to do some emails?
Sure.
Okay. Excuse my video quality. It's all botched, but it still works. This is from Jason. He says, do not read this line on the air. I'll have to read that next week because I don't know what he doesn't want me to read. This is from Beher. He says, what is a good recovery utility to acquire data from a deleted and formatted partition? Also, if I switch to a Mac computer, how would I transfer and have recognized all of my Microsoft Office files, transfer browser settings from Explorer to Firefox over to Safari, and bring my Outlook emails in context over? This is a lot. I figured you could refer me to a link on how to do it. It's from Dwayne. First of all, Dwayne, how do you a good recovery utility to acquire data from a deleted and formatted partition? I was using Get Data Back. What do you use these days?
Get Data Back.
Really?
Yep. It's not cheap. It's not free.
It's like $50.
It's not cheap.
Definitely not free. And it's yeah.
Oh, that's right. I forget. It's been so long since I bought it, but yeah.
And
it's great.
Yeah, it's easy to use too, right?
It's pretty easy to use. Yeah, very much so. And it's very much so. There's very little learning to use. There's two different programs, NTFS and FAT. Get Data Back FAT, you're probably never going to use it, but NTFS, you use it all the time.
Hmm.
This is pretty much all I use for data recovery here.
Oh, good. It's good to know. Yeah. At least I was using the right thing back then.
He was also talking about the settings. That's easy.
To a Mac?
Oh, Mac. All right. Next.
He says, if I switch to a Mac computer, how would I transfer and recognize all the Office transfer file browser settings, from Explorer to Firefox over to Safari? He's got N's, the letter N in this email in weird places. emails and contacts. Oh, Explorer and Firefox over to Safari. Okay. Yeah, on a Mac, to bring that stuff over, I'm actually not sure. I am actually not sure. I don't know the answer to that. I do not have a link.
Maybe synchronize with something like Chrome. Chrome will probably do that. If you synchronize everything with Chrome, and then like if you install Chrome and have Chrome like take all the settings and import everything, and then everything's in Chrome that you want, then you can actually set Chrome up where it synchronizes data between Chrome installations.
Oh yeah, if you're using Chrome all around, perfect. It's beautiful.
But if you're not using Chrome, you could have, so on the computer that you want everything synchronized with, import the data into Chrome.
And then start another browser up, and it'll ask you if you want to import the settings.
Yeah, and so import everything from Firefox, and I think you were saying IE, or no, not Safari, duh, it's Mac. And so import everything into Chrome, and then put synchronize Chrome between the two computers, and then install Firefox, and then import Firefox should import everything from Chrome. So that's like a roundabout way of getting it done, but that's the only way.
I never did that because I only went from Firefox to Chrome, not the other way around, but it probably would work. Most of the browsers these days, first off, they'll ask you if you want that to be the default browser every time you start it. And if you hit yes, it'll probably ask you for some import options, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, definitely.
As far as emails, I think to go from Outlook to Mac, you might have to use what's called Entourage. I don't know what they call it now. It's like the Outlook version on the Mac. I don't know, dude. It's a good question. Post it in the Podnuts forums. Those guys will know the answer to that.
Yeah.
It's an email from Alan. He says, an email mentioned a problem, an earlier email, read on the show, mentioned a problem of connecting to the internet when the process gets stuck on, quote, identifying network. I had the same problem. My local repair shop fixed it with the following registry fix on Windows 7, even though it says for Windows XP. So the problem was connecting to the internet, it gets stuck on identifying network. I don't remember the email, but hopefully you guys do, and it's probably in the show notes. The Microsoft article is support.microsoft.com/KB. It stands for knowledge base, /915162. That's support.microsoft.com/KB/915162. The title of the article is Error Message When You Start the DHCP Client Service on a Windows XP-Based Computer, Error 1075. Hopefully that helps you guys. Anything to add on that one, Steve D?
No, other than I've had stuff that's similar to that, and what I do is I usually – it's a very quick fix. Uninstall the driver for the video.
Wireless?
The wireless card. Yeah, I said video. just go to the device manager and then uninstall the driver and then let it reinstall itself or update it either the website or from Windows Update. And but now if you do that, there's one other little thing. If you do that, you wipe out all their wireless passcodes.
Uh-huh, which they probably didn't remember, but still it might be the price to pay.
They didn't remember them, but you can back them up. You can, I don't know, but back them. You can print them out at least. So you can actually get a wireless pass view, a program that you can download. It's completely free.
Wireless pass view, it's called?
Yep. And it's easy to find. Same guys that make Pradu Key, Neursoft or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. And that little tiny little utility, very quick and easy, portable also for everybody. And that thing will yank out all the passcodes. Most of them, I believe.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think I might have had one time an issue with it, but it works most of the time for me.
Awesome. Cool, man.
Yeah.
Great little app. All right. Now, that's going to be it for emails, and that's it for the... If anybody does want to send us an email, send it to mail@podnuts.com. We'll read it on the show. If you want to send us a voicemail, call 7076-PODNUT on a phone. We encourage all kinds of communication to us. Now, Steve D, if you guys don't know, Steve D, Liam Tidwell, and Chris Barry are continuing the Nuts at Night tradition in their own show called The Unbootables. You guys got to check it out. It's hosted on the Geeksters network. It's Geeksters.tv is the name of the network, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that it?
Yes.
It's on the Geeksters.tv network. The Geeksters is another cool show. It's Wilbur Bear, Mitch, Fred, and a rotating guest, I think, right? Is there somebody who's there all the time?
I'm not sure.
Anyway, yeah. They're starting up too. So there's some cool shows over at Geeksters.tv, and that's where Steve D can be found. But anything else, Steve D, you would like to say or comment on or plug?
Sure. We're going to be doing, it's going to be kind of Nuts at Night format. Like, it's going to be pretty similar to that. And we're going to be changing things up a little bit as we go along. We're still very new. I'm doing hosting. It looks like I'm going to continue doing hosting. I don't know. Me and Liam might fight over it. But the regular guests are definitely going to be Liam or Will, William Tidwell, and Chris Barry.
Cool.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. We'll have probably a domain for the website, and well, that's the Google Plus and all that other fun stuff. We'll have more information as time goes on, but that's where you're gonna go to check it out. Geeksters.tv.
Very cool, and yeah. You're doing a good job hosting, man. I like it. You're driving the show well. Last show was great, so I'm enjoying it.
Still learning how to take the reins.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're off to a good start. So
thanks.
No problem. And thank everybody for coming out live and watching us. We appreciate it. If you're downloading, that's cool. By the way, when we do a live show, we do it at 7 p.m. on Thursdays, Eastern Standard Time. That's where you want to check it out. And also, however else you're getting the content, we appreciate it. Oh, by the way, we're on Stitcher. So Stitcher's a pretty cool app. The more I use Stitcher, the more I like it. Stitcher is an Android app. I believe it's on iPhone too, right? Steve D, do you know? It's got to be. A great place to find podcasts. We're on there, so you can check us out, and we're very easily accessible there. Just do a search for Podnuts and you'll find us. That's going to be it for Podnuts Daily for this week. See you next time. Music for Podnuts Daily brought to you by Evan King at purevolume.com/Evan King.